The past few days were nothing short of historic at the world's largest hedge fund. Ray Dalio, the iconic Ray Dalio, founder of Bridgewater Associates, handed over control of the firm he built over the past 47 years. It's nothing short of a generational shift. Ray is 73, as many of you know. His successors at Bridgewater are younger, and they've got their own ideas. And we're delighted one of those leaders is here today at Bloomberg Invest. Please join me in welcoming to the stage, Nir Bhardea, Bridgewater co-CEO. Good morning, Nir.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
9.5 months ago, on January the 3rd, Bridgewater named you co-CEO. You, a mystery man, somebody almost no one outside the firm had ever heard of. And here you are today, still pretty much an unknown quantity, so I think we should begin by having you tell us your story. Who is Nir Bhardea, and what's he all about?
I love the mystery. But yeah, first of all, there was a principle there of doing before I speak. There was a desire to get in the role and actually do things. And then I think to get to know me, I know for a lot of people, I'm not necessarily what they would be expecting. I don't sound like it. I might not look like it for the role of the CEO of Bridgewater. And I think to understand that, you have to understand where I come from, because it is different. I come from the other side of the world. With grandparents that came from Libya and Poland and Hungary, some of them escaping the Second World War, losing their families in the Holocaust, and really fugitives with their backs to the wall came to what is now Israel. And the reason that's so important, because the arc of my life, my raising, is so intertwined with that story. My first memories are sitting in my grandparents' bakery. This is this Libyan guy named Shimon and this Polish woman named Rachel, who married in this extremely unlikely marriage and started a bakery. I can still smell the bread and the cookies. And seeing that generation of people literally build a country around me. My earliest memories are of dirt roads and then an industrialized city of Tel Aviv. And then for any of you that know Israel today, it's this innovative, developed country. And that lesson, Eric, of what people, the right people, when they come together and they share culture and values, can accomplish really unbelievable things, underlies everything about my life. So I'll fast forward. And 8 years ago, when I get to Bridgewater and I'm thinking about whether I'm going to stay here in the United States, I have that memory of reflecting back and saying, I found something I've been looking for a long time, which is an amazing group of people at Bridgewater that share a deep culture and common values and are on this audacious mission to understand how the world works.
You have what I would call an uncommon background for a hedge fund executive, let alone a chief executive. You're a former officer and platoon leader in the Israeli military, who, I should add, founded a drone startup, worked in real estate, served as an advisor and speechwriter to Israel's UN mission. Not common. How did you land at Bridgewater, and what was your trajectory from 8 years ago to the C-suite?
So you described the path pretty well. And again, I can take you through those three components that I've mentioned. Any one of those stops, whether it's in the military, in the Israeli mission to the United Nations, in the startup, it was always about getting together a group of people that had such deep common grounds and wanted to do something that excited me. I can go through any of those pieces, and I think the diversity of those experiences make the complexion of who I am today. And then the landing at Bridgewater was much more around finding those values than being attracted necessarily to asset management at that point. It was finding a home, a place where I could be myself.
Like, how did you stop? I mean, people have heard of Bridgewater, but it's not the kind of thing that you necessarily would have come in contact with. Did somebody recruit you? Did you respond to a job ad?
Funny story. So, no. Karen Carney-Altenboer, who's one of the most talented people we have at Bridgewater, she's the CEO of our sustainability fund, and reached out to me. And she's like, I've heard about you in the Israeli circle. She's also Israeli. And why did you come talk to us? And I came and I interviewed with Bridgewater 8 or 9 times. And it was that process of getting to know each other at the deep levels that I just described. And just on the other half of your question of, because I get this question also of, you know, you're 41 and you're the CEO of Bridgewater, and how did that happen? Like, how did that happen? And I think for a lot of us that had successes and failures in life, we know it's a combination of the opportunities that we either create for ourselves or we're lucky enough to stumble upon, and then what we do with those opportunities. And I was very lucky to cross paths with Bridgewater when Bridgewater was facing one of its most important challenges in decades. So back in 2015, when I come to Bridgewater, Bridgewater starts the journey of transitioning. And when I land in the investment engine at Bridgewater on the ground level with our equities team, it's the beginning of thinking about how we're going to transition our investment oversight from Ray Dalio to the next generation.
I just want to stop you for a moment because anyone outside the firm probably doesn't know what the investment engine is. If I'm not mistaken, it's the combination of research, portfolio construction, trading across asset classes, correct?
Good job. It's the hub. It's the brain. It's where it gets done. It's where we create insights about how the world works and then translate those insights into portfolios that serve our clients.
Nir, I referred to this earlier. A generational shift is underway at Bridgewater. It took 12 years, actually, of trying, but Ray has finally let go, right? Giving up control of the firm. Why is that so important?
So I think it's so important, and I want to comment on the 12 years also, but it's so important because that's the future of the company. So many organizations fail to move from this founder stage, especially when you have such an iconic founder like Ray, and actually create a sustainable institution. So it's everything. I mean, when you think about this mission, when you think about we're 47 years into Bridgewater now, when you think about the next 50 years or the next 100 years and keep evolving this amazing organization and serving our amazing clients well, making it through this transition meant everything about the future. Ray's 73, and forget about just Ray being 73. Where are the next ideas going to come from? The hunger, the innovation. This was a must-win battle for us. And when you look around, people talk about 12 years, and I'm like, yeah, it's a long time, but it's also a very hard thing to do. And I think if any of you know our industry, it's much easier to recall failed attempts than successful attempts.
Ray himself has described the transition as very challenging. You just said it's not easy to do. Help us understand why. Why is it so difficult?
Basically, everything has to get rewired. Everything has to get rewired in an organization. Think about the fundamentals I've talked earlier about, what draws people to work together, what defines the culture and how they interact, what defines the goals that you're going to pursue. When you're in a founder-led organization, all those things, they come out of the founder. And when you take that, it's like taking the brain and the heart out of a human and implanting a brain and a new heart. And just think about how complicated that is. And that's why that process was very gradual, time-tested. We started in 2017 with management changes. In 2020, this was the peak of my career ahead of becoming CEO. We've transitioned the investment oversight of Bridgewater 2 years ago from Ray Dalio to this investment committee led by Bob Prince, Greg Jensen, and a group of very talented asset class leaders. But just think about it. In this industry, 2 years ago, changing the people that make investment decisions at Bridgewater and then having 2 years of outstanding performance for our clients, that is an incredibly difficult thing to do and that we're very proud of. And that led us a week ago to say, okay, we're ready to transition control and move the control of the board from Ray to the next generation.
What's Ray's role now?
Ray, so to any of you who know Ray, I know you know Ray well. Ray is both an investor, active investor, thinks about markets and invests his own money and shares his ideas. So he's an idea generator, does not sit on an investment committee at all. He's a board member and he's a mentor to me and to others at Bridgewater.
How will the boardroom dynamics be different now that Ray no longer has the final word?
So I'd say it's an interesting question because at Bridgewater, we strive to have a meritocracy, not just at the board, but everywhere. Meaning we'd
Ray's famous idea meritocracy.
It's not Ray's famous idea meritocracy. It's He's Bridgewater's.
Made it famous.
It's, yeah, it's Bridgewater's. I mean, when we think about understanding how the world works, we think that person in the back row over there might have the best idea. And if we don't give that person a voice and weigh his ideas based on their merit, we might not get to truth and understand how things work. So the same dynamic we've always aspired to have in the boardroom. But in reality, when there are dynamics and rules and decisions are being made in a certain way, that can influence how the conversation happens in the board meeting. So the biggest change I think that happens with this transition is that we have an even better meritocracy in the boardroom.
I have to imagine one voice out of many. And there surely were times when this happened, he could just silence debate by saying, like, I've had enough. This is the way I want it to be.
Never happened, though.
Really?
Not once. Never happened. I want to be honest about it. It doesn't have to happen to still know who can make the decision in the room. You know, sometimes your parents are kind of like, it feels like a debate, but you know you can't win the argument in the end. But Ray never did that. Ray really, truly aspired to never veto, never overrule the rest of the board. So it never happened.
Would this have happened sooner or later, maybe, had David, your predecessor as CDO, David McCormick, not left to pursue a seat in the U.S. Senate?
I appreciate that question. So 12-year journey has a lot of heroes in it, very big undertaking. And you see Ray's face, and I'm sitting with you all here today, and it's easy kind of to take the headline faces, but there are many heroes along this way. Some still work at Bridgewater, some have left, and Dave is definitely one of those heroes that took the baton and ran a really important piece of the relay. So I think this happened right on time. He passed the baton to me, positioning me to get to the finish line. So I think it would have happened. I think it happened at the right time, but Dave played a really important role in getting us there and also a really important role in my mentorship and development.
What changes, I wonder, now that people in their 30s and 40s, right? People like you, people like Greg Jensen, whom you mentioned, the co-chief investment officer, are running Bridgewater. How are things going to be different now that you have a new heart and a new brain?
So I'll touch on what I think needs to stay the same and what is different. So the things that need to stay the same, the bedrock, remember I said in the beginning, it's the best group of people that I know. They got together and share these values of seeking improvement, learning, excellence. This is our culture, to people that I'm sure read about it. And then pursuing audacious goals, that basic bedrock stays the same. But the ideas are different. The ideas are different. What we're going to pursue is different. How we're going to evolve that culture is different. Those things of how we go about those fundamentals are different. The hunger is different. The energy is different. And we can get into examples of what that's like.
Well, and I want to. You've described, to me anyway, one of your priorities as re-underwriting the firm's culture. What do you mean by re-underwriting?
So, great. So if we just go to what the firm's culture is, I said it quickly, let me say it slower.
I mean, and let's be clear, the firm's culture has something of a reputation.
Yeah, I understand. And some of it is misunderstood. And some of it is not for everyone. It's just not for everyone, and that's okay. But this idea of a group of people who are, and I'm serious about this, who are saying, we care so much about being great that we're not going to let things stand in the way of understanding what's actually true. Because once you know what's true, you know what the problems are, you know where you need to improve. That core idea stays the same. That culture, how to do this, has evolved every year since its inception, including when Ray was in charge. But now the responsibility of who's going to evolve it, what tools are you going to use, what standards, what principles are you going to put in play, that responsibility moves to a different group of people. And that's what I mean by re-underwriting it.
Okay, so how does that happen practically? How does the culture need to adapt, to evolve, to change, to appeal to a younger generation in, what I should add, is an unbelievably competitive market for investing talent?
So I'll give examples. I think examples make this the most tangible. And again, when I say that it's not for everyone, it's a real thing. It's not for everyone. Some people come, they see it. We're not trying to market something that everybody's going to love. We have high attrition in early years, but once Bridgewater clicks for you, 25% of our people have been around for over a decade, and 50% of our people have been around for over 5 years. But I'll give you an example. One of the things that we learned that we need to change is in this directness of let me tell you the truth and what I think and all these things. If you're thinking about a meritocracy and you want that person in the back row to speak, that level of assertiveness, that level of extroversion, that level of directness might mute that person. But you need, that might be the smartest person in the room. How do you change that dynamic and still create that directness with making sure they're not on their back feet and being able to express their ideas? That's a good example of an evolution we're really focused on this year, of that inclusion.
How do you do it? Bridgewater's famous for tools. Do you have new tools?
Yeah, so we evolve our tools, an example. We're actually next week rolling out, we have this DOT system. This DOT system allows every person now in the room to kind of put their thoughts about what others are doing in real time. We changed it. We changed the criteria, we changed what the feedback is like and what it sounds like, and we put out new principles. So as an example of the thing that I just said, one of the principles that we've created is how people should engage with their thoughts. And this is going to sound like a subtle difference, but when I'm saying something to you, am I saying that to you because I need to convince you that I'm right, or am I saying that to you as a question because I want to understand what's right?
1 year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, will we think of Bridgewater as being, quote unquote, more normal? Is that one of your goals?
No. No, not at all. I think Bridgewater is outstanding today, and I hope Bridgewater will remain outstanding in the ways that it is today. I think it's crazy to be normal in that way.
Will we come to think of its culture as a little more normal?
Again, anybody that looks at the world sees different pockets of people come together around different sets of values. I actually think that level of distinctiveness of Bridgewater creates that unity that then allows us to go and pursue audacious goals, like I said before.
Do you and Greg believe as passionately in radical truthfulness and radical transparency?
And Bob Prince, absolutely. And Karen Carney-Oldham-Bohr. The most important thing that brings people together around at Bridgewater is the belief in those values.
Greg has talked about needing to take bigger risks on talent and on technology. What specifically do you and he have in mind?
So I think generally I'll talk about talent and I'll talk about technology and I'll talk about risk in general. I think with the new blood, the new brain, the new heart, there's a hunger. There's a risk appetite. There are ideas. We talked about this. So in talent, I think just our open-mindedness, our desire to move from this founder-led organization to a team-based organization puts a lot more emphasis on finding great players.
And empowering them
and creating the space for them. So that's a big part of what we're doing now and we've been doing over the last several years. And on technology, anybody who's in our industry, who's trying to seek alpha or, again, this mission of understanding how the world works, knows that in order to do that, you have to be on the cutting edge of technology. The ability to ingest the amounts of data that are available in the world today. Do analysis on that data to create insights, and then take that insight and construct portfolios with this. You can't do that unless you're on the cutting edge of technology, and that takes investments and innovation. We've been doing that for decades, and we plan to stay on the cutting edge of that.
You helped to build the investment engine, but you're not really part of the investment process, right?
Right.
Is that weird as the co-CEO of a $150 billion asset management company?
I think it makes perfect sense, meaning I feel privileged that I have spent nearly a decade, in the investment engine, so deeply immersed with our investment teams, managing the investment teams, being a part of the investment process. People need to know what they do best. I'm not the best investor you're going to find, but I design the investors really well, do their jobs well, and I set the strategic priorities and the culture and the people. And it takes a partnership like that between me and Mark Bertolini, who's my partner, along with Greg Jensen and Bob Prince and Karen and others, to create that synergy of 1+1 equals a lot more than 3.
So in addition to talent and technology, which are clearly priorities, what are some of your other priorities as co-CEO?
So let me answer that at 2 levels. I'll give you the interesting answer, but I'm going to keep hammering the point that I want people to understand about us. So more than anything in this transition from founder to us, if you look in 5 years and you're saying they still have the best people in the world coming to work at Bridgewater, we nailed it. They're still operating in this uncompromising way to seek excellence and learning and truth. We nailed it. And they're still going after audacious goals to help them understand how the world works. We nailed it. And then underneath that, you can expect four things from us. One, we've been on this journey to marry our top-down macro understanding to a bottoms-up understanding, which is more and more feasible because of how technology has been evolving. And that gives us a lot of opportunities in the equity space and in the credit space. You can expect us to keep mining in that direction in serious ways. Second is we've been involved in China and have been leaders in understanding China. And you can expect us, given how big of a deal that is, to keep leading on that front. Sustainability has been a big deal. We can get into why. And then the last thing is the technology that surrounds all these things, as I've touched on before. Those are four threads that if you look at our goals over the next 5 years, you should be able to measure us against each one of those four.
A couple of quick questions then. Say a little bit more about sustainability. It's becoming, rightly or wrongly, a controversial topic.
So I'll put the controversy aside because it's not. We're not thinking of view on any of these things. We're not thinking of view on sustainability or on China. I'll take both of those examples together. If we're entering the space, it's happening for one of two reasons or both of these reasons. It either matters a lot for somebody trying to understand how the world works. So there are $30 to $40 trillion of assets that are not taking sustainability into consideration and how they're managed. China is 20% of the world's GDP, a smaller part of the markets, but those are big deals for an investor trying to understand how the world works. So that's one motivation. Is it a big deal? You got to understand it. The second thing is we have these amazing clients, and they have their goals and priorities about how they want to manage their portfolios. And a growing number of them are saying to us, this matters to me. Either we want exposure to China, or we want to invest 3D investing and invest in through sustainable lens. One of those two reasons, or both of them, are the reasons why I put those two things on our list.
You mentioned equities. You mentioned credit. I might throw private markets into that. Are those areas that Bridgewater is going to go into as an investor, or is it simply just a matter of understanding those markets better so that you can be a better macro investor?
So I'd say that's an open question in the sense of we're already deeply in equities. And as I said, equities and credit in a more bottoms-up way is a journey we've been on, and you can expect us to keep mining that direction. But I would say even things like private assets, it's not that it's within our plans now, but it's certainly been a growing force that matters to any investors and our ability to understand that. And if at any point we would have thought, hey, you know what, to create the best portfolios for our clients, we should get into that space, then we would have done it. It just wasn't the thing that we needed to do.
Near, your clients have a very simple way of measuring, of defining first and then measuring success: returns. Mm-hmm. And this year, Bridgewater's returns, at least in the pure alpha strategy, are good. How do you define and measure success?
So first of all, yes, we've had, I'd say since that change that we've done in the summer of 2020, moving to the investment committee, we've delivered really great result for our clients. But I would just come back to the point that I made about my grandparents in the beginning of the conversation. Our success and the ability to create returns for our clients through the years is just going to be measured by having the great people come work at Bridgewater, having them operate in the culture that we've discussed, and keep thinking critically about the most audacious goals for us to pursue together.
Nir, thanks very much. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Nir Bhardia, the co-CEO of Bridgewater.